Welcome to the online ministry of La Jolla United Methodist Church, a congregation of faithful Christians right along the Southern California coast. Together, we seek to grow in our individual spirituality and in connected community with one another. All are invited to join in this vibrant faith community. For more information, visit our website at lajollaunitedmethodist.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
Good morning. The scripture for today is from Mark 15, verses 1 through 15. At daybreak, the chief priests, with the elders, legal experts, and the whole Sanhedrin, formed a plan. They bound Jesus, led him away, and turned him over to Pilate. Pilate questioned him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus replied, "That's what you say." The chief priests were accusing him of many things. Pilate asked him again, "Aren't you going to answer? What about all these accusations?" But Jesus gave no more answers, so that Pilate marveled. During the festival, Pilate released one prisoner to them, whomever they requested. A man named Barabbas was locked up with the rebels who had committed murder during an uprising. The crowd pushed forward and asked Pilate to release someone, as he regularly did. Pilate answered them, "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" He knew the chief priests had handed him over because of jealousy. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release Barabbas to them instead. Pilate replied, "Then what do you want me to do with the one you call king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "Crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Why? What wrong has he done?" They shouted even louder, "Crucify him." Pilate wanted to satisfy the crowd, so he released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus whipped, then handed him over to be crucified. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
In the final days of a life that would change the world, a man named Jesus walks the streets of Jerusalem. His path led to betrayal, suffering, and sacrifice. But within that darkness, a profound light emerged. Join us this Lent as we journey through the last week, exploring the compassion, radical love, and justice of Jesus.
We began the season of Lent with Jesus' entry into Jerusalem. And this final Sunday of Lent before the celebration of Easter, we will explore the passion, the crucifixion of the Christ. But also this is the beginning of Holy Week, remembering that this coming Thursday is a Maundy Thursday celebration in partnership with our friends in the sanctuary at Pacific Beach United Methodist Church. This Holy Week, we will have a Good Friday service right here in this sanctuary, again with our friends joining us from Pacific Beach United Methodist Church. Those services will not only be at those two locations, but also online. So in a way, we end at the beginning. As we conclude this season of Lent in terms of these Sundays, in terms of this series, we also begin Holy Week. You'll be asked later to do something over the course of this week to explore Holy Week for yourself in a personal way. And I hope that you will join. And yet, here we are today, having waved palms. And now the cross looms. We end at the beginning. We began this series as Jesus entered Jerusalem, and then we talked about the turning over of the tables in Jerusalem. And one of the things that we highlighted as we talked about why Jesus may have been angry and turned over those tables, we explored some reasons that maybe the Gospel of Mark doesn't support Jesus' anger. One of those was about the temple sacrifice, which was an essential part of the Jewish faith. Looking faithfully at the Gospel of Mark, it doesn't seem that that author points Jesus' anger at the idea of sacrifice. Indeed, we talked about, if you look at the roots of the word sacrifice, it means to make sacred. And in no way would the Jewish understanding of sacrifice, the temple sacrifice, in no way should that have been considered in Jewish tradition or according to the Gospel of Mark, should that have been considered as those flawless animals being sacrificed to somehow be some sort of atonement or substitution for the Jewish people who were making their sacrifices. And I told you at that time we would come back to that. Because as we explore the story of Good Friday, we are reminded what we have been told about the purpose for Jesus being on the cross. There are many Christian traditions that will tell us that Jesus' death on the cross was a direct substitution for the sins of all humankind. We can have long conversations about the purpose of Jesus' death on the cross. I will tell you that this idea was not present in the first millennium of Christianity. Millennium. This idea began in 1097, written and argued by Anselm, the Bishop of Canterbury. That's when it was a new idea. There are lots of ways to talk about the purpose of Jesus' death on the cross. There are volumes written, and I want you to know we're not going to get into all of those today. I will say this, and I want to say it clearly, that as we have journeyed through this season of Lent, we have continued to be specific about reading through the Gospel of Mark. And what I want to say simply and clearly is that the Gospel of Mark does not support the idea of Christ's death on the cross as sacrifice for the sins of humankind. I'm not saying that's an improper theology. I'm saying if we're going to focus on the Gospel of Mark, then we're not going to talk about that because it doesn't show up in the Gospel of Mark. And the truth is that any time we think about Holy Week, any time we look at the events of the week, we have a tendency to put several of the Gospels together, particularly the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. In some cases, John. Because every time we envision the Last Supper, we envision both communion and the washing of the feet when those two things don't happen in any single Gospel. We put them together. And so I want to be clear and transparent that we will focus on the Gospel of Mark, as we have throughout this season of Lent. Now, the Gospel of Mark, when the Gospel of Mark talks about Good Friday, when the Gospel of Mark talks about the events of the day, very conveniently breaks it up into specific time periods, beginning at dawn, and going to about 9 a.m., from 9 a.m. to noon, from noon to 3 p.m., just a quick aside, that third interval from noon to 3 p.m. has exactly one verse in it. And then 3 p.m. to evening. And then there's really a fifth interval that's just the evening on. So we have these time periods, and I'd like for us to look at them again, according to the Gospel of Mark. I do want to say briefly that our primary source for this entire Lenten sermon series has been the Gospel of Mark, and we've had an aid, a helper. And that aid, that helper, has been this book, The Last Week, by Marcus Borg and John Dominic Crossan, which has helped us to focus our study as our primary source is the Gospel of Mark. We heard, as Colin so capably read already, that at daybreak, the chief priests with the elders, legal experts, and the whole Sanhedrin formed a plan. They bound Jesus, led him away, and turned him over to Pilate. Pilate questioned him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" I don't know if you've ever been in conversation with someone with whom you disagree, and sometimes people have a tendency to emphasize words. You know how I hear Pilate asking this question? I hear him mocking. "Are you the king of the Jews?" And I really want Jesus to have mocked back. I'm not sure that's in Jesus' character. But I really want Jesus to have said, "That's what you say." The chief priests were accusing him of many things, and Pilate asked him again, "Aren't you going to answer? What about all these accusations?" But Jesus gave no more answers, so that Pilate marveled. I don't necessarily think that Jesus was being petty in giving Pilate the silent treatment, but I do think it's an act of authority. We can choose to be silent in the face of accusations and toxicity. I don't believe that's petty. I believe that shows remarkable strength. During the festival, Pilate released one prisoner to them, whomever they requested. We know the story about Barabbas. It's interesting. We have a number of sources from this time period, not only the Synoptic Gospels, but we have some extra religious sources. Now, when I say extra religious, I want to be clear about what I mean. I don't mean they're sources that are like super duper religious. I mean extra as in outside, outside of religious sources. Notably, Josephus, the historian, the Jewish historian. It's interesting, we'll talk about Josephus a couple of times today. It's interesting that in no other writings outside the Synoptic Gospels is there any tradition about releasing another prisoner. I'm not sure what to make of that. Again, focusing on the Gospel of Mark, it might be important to note that the most threatening thing to the religious leaders and to Pilate himself, the Roman collaborators, the most threatening thing is not the one who was a rebel who had committed murder during an uprising. He was not the biggest threat. Instead, Jesus, the quiet, humble, prophetic one who rode into town on a donkey, was the biggest threat to the religious leaders and to Pilate. And then, of course, there's the crowd who's gathered. The crowd who yells, "Crucify him." And we talked back on our first Sunday about whether or not the crowd that welcomed Jesus with palms is the same crowd as those who yelled to crucify. And we agreed at this time, and I think it's, we agreed at that time, and I think it's supported by this text, that it's not the same crowd. This is a crowd who is riled up by the religious leaders, it tells us. This is a crowd who, if this is a space where Pilate is questioning, if this is a space of, listen, there's two different places where this could have taken place. It could have taken place in King Herod's palace. It could have taken place in the Fortress Antonia. There's debate about which of those two spaces it might have taken place in. Either one of those spaces are controlled spaces. You don't get in unless somebody lets you in. Do you think they're going to let in supporters of Jesus? No, they're going to let in their folks who are going to agree with them and follow their lead. So, Barabbas is released, and Jesus is whipped and handed over to be crucified. So the soldiers lead Jesus away into a courtyard of the palace known as the governor's headquarters. They're together. They dress him in a purple robe. They twist a crown of thorns and put it on him. They salute him, "Hey, King of the Jews." They strike his head with a stick. They spit on him. They kneel before him to honor him and really mock him. When they finish mocking him, they strip him of the purple robe, they put his own clothes on him, and they lead him out to crucify him. These actions weaken Jesus so much that he cannot carry his own cross. You see, the Roman tradition of crucifixion puts fixed places along very public areas where people are crucified. Usually, it's just the upshaft of the cross that is fixed in place, and the person must carry the crossbeam. Jesus is too weak even for this. And so a man from Cyrene is forced to carry it on Jesus' behalf. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means skull place. They tried to give him wine mixed with myrrh, but he didn't take it. They crucified him. That one sentence, they crucified him. The Gospel of Mark was written around 70 CE or AD, depending on how you want to call it, about 70 years later. The author of the Gospel of Mark needs to write no more than one sentence because the people know what crucifixion looks like. We often imagine a cross that's 10, 12, 15 feet in the air. Do you know that the Roman practice is for the cross to be much lower? Perhaps not unlike this one. Do you know why? Because not only for the humiliation, not only for the particular cruelty, but because the Roman leaders understand the importance of burial. And if you hang that person lower on the cross, because of beasts and birds, it is less likely that there will be anything left to bury. They crucified him. They divided up his clothes, drawing lots for them to determine who would take what. We'll come back to that verse in a moment. It was 9 in the morning when they crucified him. The notice of the formal charge written against him was written, "The King of the Jews." They crucified 2 outlaws with him, one on his right and one on his left. People walking by insulted him, shaking their heads and saying, "Ha! So you're going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, were you? Save yourself and come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests were making fun of him among themselves, together with the legal experts. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself." Even those who had been crucified with Jesus insulted him. From noon until 3 in the afternoon, the whole earth was dark. Now again, in extra-biblical sources, there's no mention of a global darkness. Scientists have calculated eclipses, and there was nothing around that period of time. But I wonder if we can understand the darkness that overcomes us when something terrible and tragic has happened. And whether the sun is obscured or some way, or we are so overcome by darkness and grief that it feels like the whole world is dark. Can we feel the sense of darkness? At 3, Jesus cried out with a loud shout, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you left me?" Some standing there said, "Look, he's calling Elijah." Someone filled a sponge with sour wine and put it on a pole and offered it to Jesus. "Let's see if Elijah will come down and take him down." But Jesus let out a loud cry and died. The curtain of the sanctuary was torn in two from top to bottom. Do you know what this curtain is? It's in the Holy of Holies. It's the curtain inside the temple. Only one person, the chief priest, can even go behind that curtain. He can only go behind that curtain once a year. The curtain is torn in two. When the centurion who stood facing Jesus saw how he died, he said, "This man was certainly God's son." It is a centurion. It is a Roman centurion. You know what a centurion is? We might think of it as a battalion commander. Centurion, someone in charge of 100 men, centurion. It is a Roman centurion who is the first person in the Gospel of Mark to name Jesus as God's son. It's not even one of the disciples. Now you might say, wait a minute, didn't Peter say something? What, one of the times that Jesus said he was going to be crucified? That he was going to be arrested and betrayed and die? No, that's the Gospel of Matthew. We remember it well, don't we? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. The Gospel of Mark doesn't say that. We're confined to the Gospel of Mark for this purpose. And this author notes a Roman centurion as the first person to name Jesus as God's son. Some women were watching from a distance, including Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, Joseph and Salome. When Jesus was in Galilee, these women had followed and supported him along with many other women who had come to Jerusalem with him. Do we remember the importance of women in the Bible, and particularly the story of Jesus' crucifixion and Easter, when it is women who were the first to find him? Here's my question. Where are the 12? Or at least the 11? They're not even there. They're not even there. Since it was late in the afternoon on preparation day, just before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea dared to approach Pilate and ask for Jesus' body. Pilate wondered if Jesus was already dead. He called the centurion and asked whether Jesus had already died. When he learned that Jesus was dead, Pilate gave the dead body to Joseph. He brought a linen cloth, took Jesus down from the cross, wrapped him in the cloth, laid him in a tomb that had been carved out of a rock. He rolled a stone against the entrance to the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where he was buried. This is the end of our Good Friday text. But I don't want to leave us in this space because I feel that darkness. The author of the Gospel of Mark had a tendency to draw from Hebrew texts. And particularly in this story, he draws from one of the Psalms. Psalm 22. When Jesus says, my God, why have you left me? We read from Psalm 22, which is noted as a psalm of David. My God, why have you left me all alone? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my anguished groans? My God, I cry out during the day, but you don't answer. Even at night time, I don't stop. Jesus says, my God, why have you left me? Psalm 22:18 says, they divvy up my garments among themselves, they cast lots for my clothes. And verse 7 says, all who see me make fun of me, they gape, shaking their heads. Verse 8 continues, he committed himself to the Lord, so let God rescue him, let God deliver him, because God likes him so much. You see the parallel with Psalm 22. And if we continue with Psalm 22, looking at verse 25, it reads, I offer praise in the great congregation because of you. I will fulfill my promises in the presence of those who honor God. Let all those who are suffering eat and be full. Let all who seek the Lord praise him. I pray your hearts live forever. And I wonder if the author of the Gospel of Mark quotes so deeply from the 22nd Psalm because he wants us to see that the story of Good Friday is incomplete without the story of Easter. The story of the suffering of the cross, broken down into three-hour segments filled with agony, is incomplete without the story of resurrection. So, we find ourselves at both the ending and the beginning. Here we are on Palm Sunday and Passion Sunday at the beginning of Holy Week. And we can gather together in person or online for Maundy Thursday for Good Friday. And I hope that you will do these things, and I hope that you will recognize that even these powerful services are incomplete without coming and celebrating at Easter sunrise or Easter worship with brass and hymns. I said it last year during our Easter celebration services that the worst thing is never the last thing. Here we are. In the shadow of the cross, knowing that this story is incomplete without Easter. Let us step faithfully into this time, offering praise in the great congregation because of a God who fulfills God's promises. Let those who are suffering eat and be full.